Over the last 2 months, Beacon Hill has been rocked by allegations of sexual misconduct by state lawmakers. First, there were reports by the Boston Globe of aides and lobbyists who claimed to have been harassed during meetings with elected officials. Then a few weeks ago, another report in the Boston Globe that Senate President Stan Rosenberg's husband, Brian Hefner, had assaulted or harassed 4 men and bragged about his influence over the Senate. Rosenberg stepped down from his leadership post, and Senate lawmakers hired an outside counsel to find out if any ethics rules were violated. To fill Rosenberg's place, lawmakers elected Harriet Chandler to lead the Senate, and we're going to hear from her right now. The Worcester Democrat is 79 years old and has served in the legislature for 23 years. And Acting Senate President Harriet Chandler, welcome to Radio Boston. It's great to have you.
It's a pleasure to be on the show.
So it's been a whirlwind couple of months at the State House. How are you doing in this job, which you didn't necessarily expect to have?
Well, it's been a whirlwind 3 weeks is really what it's been. Not even 3 weeks. We're moving along, and I think that everybody's trying to be helpful, and that's what I need, the cooperation and support of my colleagues and the people out there.
As we mentioned, the circumstances that led to you becoming acting Senate president are difficult ones. You have a close relationship with Senator Stan Rosenberg. For the coming weeks or months while the ethics investigation is going on, what's your top priority as acting Senate president? How do you see your role right now?
Well, I see my role basically as being the bridge to move the Senate forward as we go into the last 7 months of our session. We have a lot of legislation to do, a lot of work to do for the on behalf of the people, the Commonwealth, and that's my foremost job.
So it sounds like you're saying that your job is to create a kind of stability there.
That's exactly what my job is.
Right.
I am the bridge. I am the kind of the caretaker. I just make sure we keep moving forward and that we have no vacuums here that have to be filled or are not filled. That would be terrible.
It seems like one of the challenges for you might be that it could be difficult to lead this body while there are at least 4 senators that we know of who have publicly said they would like to be Senate president if Stan Rosenberg doesn't return to that job. To what extent is that a challenge?
It's always a challenge, but I must tell you that the 4 happen to be on my leadership team, and the 4 have agreed to cut back on any kind of electioneering that they would be doing, campaigning that they would be doing, because they understand that the good of the body and the work that we really need to accomplish is at stake here.
Right. Now, do you hope and expect that Stan Rosenberg will be returning to the position as Senate president?
I hope that we will have a fair and honest investigation. That's what we expect. And whatever that turns out to be, that is what it will be.
All right. I want our listeners to know a little bit something about you, because you haven't been front and center in many ways. So let me just list a couple of facts, and then I want to ask you about your path to politics. You live in Worcester. You have a background in education. You studied political science at Wellesley University. You graduated from the same class as former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. You also have a doctorate in international relations from Clark University and an MBA from Simmons College. So that's quite a background, but it doesn't necessarily say politics. What drew you into politics?
Well, I felt that about 25 years ago, my mother was very sick, and I realized you come to terms with your own mortality at some point. And I said, you know, it's time for me to give back. And the best way I can give back is to use this wonderful education I have and this all the experiences I've had in life and do something meaningful. And as it happened, I decided that I would run for the school committee in Worcester. And I did. And I won a seat on the school committee, and that's how it all began.
And what did you like about it? I mean, was it sort of like a revelation, like, aha, this is what I'm meant to do?
Yes, it was a ha-ha experience. I loved it from the very beginning. I loved the opportunity to give back. I loved the opportunity to do good things. I love the opportunity to use my education and to make a difference. And so all of those things made it really the perfect choice for me. A little late at coming there, but I guess I'm a late bloomer.
Well, speaking of that, and Harriet Chandler, I hope you don't mind if I point this out. You are currently the oldest senator currently serving in the State House. You're going to turn 80 years old this coming Wednesday. So let me say happy birthday to you, first of all.
Thank you. It is not easy to do this publicly, but I guess I'm going to do it publicly.
You've been in the legislature for 22 years.
23.
Excuse me.
This is the end of my 23rd year.
Wow. So the first female senator from Worcester, elected in 2001, and you're the second woman to lead the Massachusetts Senate. So in this regard, you're a bit of a trailblazer, but women are still underrepresented in politics, certainly on Beacon Hill. 25% of the legislators are women. How important is it for you to boost those numbers?
Well, I would love to boost those numbers. Actually, the numbers that we have on Beacon Hill of women representation are actually the exact same as they were when I came in 23 years ago.
Wow.
That is really not saying very much at all. We have a wonderful group of women. They're hardworking and they've done good things. But we need to have more women in the pipeline in order to have more women represented in the legislature.
Well, what's holding those numbers down?
I think what's holding them down is there's a biological issue. Women get married, they have children, they want to be home, they want to take care of their children. They worry about whether they can make this trip from wherever they live to Boston and the hours that we keep, the demands on us. It's a very public position, and it's a very demanding position. It's 24/7, 52 weeks a year. We're as much of a professional legislature as exists across the country. And I think women are a little afraid of that. I think women also are a little afraid of, can I raise the money? Can I do the job? Do I need another degree in order to get there? All of these things, probably each woman who serves in the legislature has gone through in their own mind, and they've been worried about whether they can do it. I'm here to say, yes, they can do it, and I hope to see more women get involved.
Well, let me ask you, if I can, about this particular sort of cultural moment we're in, I guess, across the country. There's been lots of reporting led by the Boston Globe about a culture of sexual harassment on Beacon Hill. Do you think that's part of the problem?
I don't think there's any one single culture in Beacon Hill. It's very hard to define. We're like anybody else. I think you're seeing all of these issues of sexual harassment occurring in every field, in every line of work. People are speaking up now, people who've been afraid. At first it was women. At first it was women who were afraid that if they did speak up, they would lose any opportunity they had to advance in their jobs. A lot of women who are in male-oriented jobs are worried about that. I think if you were to talk to the women who work for WBUR, you would probably find the same thing is true. We've all, and I put myself right in that Me Too category, we've all had examples of sexual harassment. Not necessarily sexual assault, but sexual harassment. And we've been afraid. We've had no one to talk to. And so we've sort of gone out of our way to be extra careful in going around the problem that might be before us. But Beacon Hill, I have to tell you, is filled with basically fantastic, dedicated public servants. And that's a very special kind of person who gets involved on Beacon Hill. They could probably be earning more money doing something else, but they want to give back and they believe in what they're doing. It's unfortunate to think that everyone who works on Beacon Hill is in any way, shape, or form a harasser. These allegations that have been made originally started in the House, and we thought they were just attacks on women, assaults on women, harassing women. But then we've learned since in the allegations that have been made in the Senate that that's not true. It's men and women, and we have to be more vigilant. And I think we on Beacon Hill are certainly going to try to stand up and look at what we're doing and look at how we're doing it and try to hold ourselves to the highest possible standard.
Are there particular sort of solutions, rules, ethics guidelines, whatever it would take to help you be more vigilant, to help the body hold itself to a higher standard?
Well, let me tell you what the Senate has done these last 3 years, where we thought we were doing the right thing. We have a handbook, an employee handbook that's on every desk that has our policy on sexual harassment printed very clearly that we have zero tolerance on sexual harassment. Every employee, including every member, has an orientation on sexual harassment, and we're also tested on it. We thought we were doing a good job. We really thought we were doing a good job. But, you know, we learned in the last few weeks that we weren't, and we're going to try to improve. We're going to try to see what we can do about interns, for example. That's been a bit of a hole that we've become aware of. Third parties who come into the state house, what do we do about them? We're going to deal with that. We now have a committee on sexual harassment, and you know that was formerly an all-women's committee. And we've learned that that's wrong. We don't want an all-women's committee. We need a co-ed committee that can look at this problem in every aspect of it.
Mm. Let me ask you, if I could, about another controversy that erupted this month. Former state senator Brian Joyce was indicted on federal corruption charges for allegedly collecting about $1 million in bribes and kickbacks and allegedly laundering that money through his law firm. Can I ask you, for your reaction to that indictment?
Well, law enforcement did the job that they were expected to do. They did it well. And the case now goes to the courts, and we expect them to do their job.
Let me ask you about the big national picture. You're a Democratic leader in a very blue state. This is a moment, obviously, nationally where Republicans are ascendant. The Republicans are very likely going to get their big legislative accomplishment in Washington this week with this tax bill. How do you think about this political moment as a Democratic leader in Massachusetts?
What we've found for the last year that we've had a Republican administration in Washington is that there is more chaos in Washington than ever before, and that more and more public policy issues are being shunted down to the state level because we're the ones closest to it. So I would say that you're going to probably see more legislation going through, struggling to figure out how to pay for some of the major issues that are coming down that the federal government is not concerned about. We're very concerned about, for example, the Children's Health Insurance Program, which was initiated when I was the chairman of health care when I was in the House.
And this is known as the CHIP program. Right. And of course, the Republican Congress has not seen fit to fund it yet or refund it.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct. And it's a very important program. These are our young people who need health care. And we're going to have to figure out, and fortunately, I guess our governor understands that as well, because we're going to be able to hold over this program until 2018. But what then? Where are we going to get the money? How much is it going to cost? It's an important program for the health of our kids.
Last question, Senator Chandler. We mentioned that your seniority, both in terms of position but also age, how much longer do you see yourself doing this work?
I don't know. I feel healthy. I feel like I'm all there.
And you still enjoy it.
I love what I do. Oh, I love what, you know, you don't do this job unless you love it because it's hard. It really is hard. And I didn't expect to be in this position. I never asked for it. I never looked for it. And here I am. I'm very honored by the trust that my colleagues have given me. But I have a lot of work to do in the next 7 months, and I am very acutely aware of it. And hopefully, even for somebody as senior as I, hopefully I will be able to get it done.
Well, that's Acting Senate President Harriet Chandler. Senator Chandler, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for taking time to speak to us
today.
Thank
you.
And stay with us. Coming up, bringing Shakespeare's words into the age of hip-hop. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.